Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the great sweep of time, modern humans and Neanderthals overlapped on this planet. Then, about 30,000 years ago, Neanderthals died out. But apparently not before some prehistoric hanky-panky with Homo sapiens. A breakthrough new mapping of the Neanderthal genome has been put forward as proof positive that Homo sapiens and Neanderthals interbred, that today humans from Poughkeepsie to Papua New Guinea are, in their genes, 1-4% Neanderthal. That evidence is challenging the archaeological record and long-standing beliefs about human evolution. This hour on Point, we'll talk with the team that broke the DNA code and look at what his prehistoric mating means for humanity, then and now. You can join the conversation. Are you shocked to hear that humans have Neanderthals in the family? What's your question for the team that cracked the Neanderthal genome? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Cold Spring Harbor, New York, is Richard Edward Green. Ed Green, Assistant Professor of Biomolecular Engineering at the University of California in Santa Cruz. His technique for isolating Neanderthal DNA from bone fragments was crucial to the mapping. Ed Green, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Also with us in Cold Spring Harbor is David Reich, the third scientist in the team, who, along with Ed Green and Svante Paabo, who I hope joins us in a moment, who cracked the Neanderthal genome. He's associate professor in the Department of Genetics at Harvard Medical School. David Reich, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You guys have everybody's attention. This is quite amazing, amazing news. Ed Green, just give us a sense of how you did this.
I'm sorry, we're having a little bit of technical problems here. Can you repeat the question?
Yes. How did you do it? How did you essentially prove that Neanderthals and Homo sapiens interbred?
Well, it's been a long process of collecting data that started really several decades ago when Svante demonstrated that one could recover DNA from bones. And recently, there have been technical improvements that have allowed us to get data in really large amounts and genome scale amounts of data. And so the last few years have been a process of collecting these data and aligning them to the human genome and the chimpanzee genome for comparison. And then only recently were we able to collect enough data from humans around the world to do this comparison that David Reich and his colleagues really worked through the methodology of to show that Neanderthals are slightly more similar to non-Africans than Africans, and make this convincing case that there has been admixture in our ancestral past.
To non-Africans and Africans, we'll talk about that. You've got people all over the world talking. I'm looking here at John Hawks, evolutionary geneticist at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, saying now, and he's looking at your research, he says, we can now say with absolute certainty that we've got these Neanderthal genes. They're not them anymore. They're us. David Reich, how do you figure out that humans, many humans, now carry, as your research says, 1-4% Neanderthal genes? What does that mean?
Well, I think that we looked at this in a bunch of different ways, and one of the ways we looked at this is by comparing different modern human individuals from around the world to each other, looking at places in the genetic material from different individuals around the world where they differed from each other, and said, at these sites where they were different, which is closer to Neanderthal? So, for example, if you take a European person and a Chinese person, and you look at all the sites that they have that are different from each other, and you say, where do they match? Who matches Neanderthal more often, the European or the Chinese person? What you see is that they match about equally often, almost exactly equally often. And the same if you compare people, different very diverse people from Africa, from south of the Sahara. People from South Africa and Namibia match Neanderthal equally often to people from West Africa and Nigeria. But when you compare people from Africa south of the Sahara to people outside of Africa, we find a consistent pattern, which is that non-Africans are more closely related to the Neanderthal genome material that we sequenced than Africans are. And that's a very consistent, striking, overwhelmingly convincing signal in the genetic data. So that was one thing that we saw. If you evaluate what kind of mixture between Neanderthals and modern humans you would need to produce that, that's where we get the number 1% to 4%.
Ed Green, give us a little geography and prehistory lesson here. Why would it be that Europeans and Asians would have more Neanderthal genes than Africans?
Well, Neanderthals are known to have existed throughout Eurasia, and as far as we know, they did not exist within Africa. And the history of modern humans is that maybe something like 100,000 years ago, we evolved into this anatomically modern humans and colonized the rest of Africa, and then came out of Africa and colonized the rest of the world. I should say that why it should be this is a bit of a hard thing to answer because it was unexpected. The folks who imagine that there may have been some genetic interaction between Neanderthals and early humans kind of envisioned this scenario where it would have happened mainly in Europe, where we know Neanderthals the best. We see most of their fossil bones there, and we know that they overlapped in time and space with early modern humans in Europe. So the expectation was if there was admixture, and clearly our expectation was that there was not admixture.
But you found there was.
But we found there was. But this was not a scenario that we had really envisioned before looking at the data. And the most parsimonious explanation for this is that perhaps there was some admixture very early on when humans first came out of Africa and encountered Neanderthals in the Middle East. A little bit of genetic material was picked up in that contact and then spread throughout the rest of the world into all of the populations that went on to colonize the all of the reaches that they went to in the next few tens of thousands of years. This is the most parsimonious explanation for the data that we see now.
So the picture that suggests is Homo sapiens coming out of Africa by land, that would have meant up along the eastern Mediterranean and running into Neanderthals there. If I've read correctly from you and others, there are caves in that area, Middle East, eastern Mediterranean, Israel, that were actually shared. I don't know if it was simultaneously or not, but where Homo sapiens lived and Neanderthals lived in the same caves, David Reich.
I think that's right. I mean, I think we are very much geneticists, not archaeologists. But there are caves, especially around Mount Carmel in modern-day Israel, where there are different layers corresponding to different dates that have remains of anatomically modern humans and Neanderthals. I think that, for example, there's clearly evidence of anatomically modern humans being outside of Africa, some of the earliest, perhaps the earliest evidence of anatomically modern humans fossils being outside of Africa about 100,000 years ago in that region. And then subsequently in the same region, there's evidence of Neanderthals, say, around 80,000 years ago and somewhat more recently. I think that there's no evidence that those two, that there was coexistence of those populations at the same time, but it seems plausible, potentially, that because there was different times when modern humans, then Neanderthals, then again modern humans were in this region, that they might have encountered them in this each other in this region. As Ed said, the place where in the world where there's the best documented evidence of actual archaeological and interaction between Neanderthals and modern humans is in southern Europe, and we don't really find any signal of gene flow in southern Europe. It doesn't mean that it didn't occur, but we just don't find any genetic evidence.
So many questions here. We're going to bring in a Paleolithic archaeologist before we're finished in this hour. But Ed, what does it mean that this 1% to 4% of Neanderthal genes in Homo sapien genome, for many people anyway, genome, what does it mean that it spreads so widely? How would that happen? I mean, first of all, this presumes interbreeding. Was it clear that was even possible, that they were compatible enough that they could do that? Was it clear before your research? And how would these genes spread so widely around the planet?
So it was not at all the expected result. We had data from the mitochondrial genome since 1997, little bits of sequence from the mitochondrial genome from accumulated now from about a dozen Neanderthal individuals, and that story is very clear, that Neanderthals fall outside the variation that we see in humans who live today. And we have mitochondrial data from tens of thousands of individuals all over the world, and never do we see this Neanderthal mitochondrial sequence. So I think with those limited data in hand, we really had the expectation that we would not see any evidence for this, for admixture between Neanderthals and humans. But the mitochondria is a bit of a strange genetic locus in that, but first of all, it's only one genetic locus, and each part of our genome can tell us a different story about history, and this can tell us only one story, and it's a story that is just the maternal lineage. You get this from your mother, who got it from her mother, who got it from her mother, and for this reason, it's not so great for probing deep history. And just by chance, it turns out that we don't see this signal for admixture. We don't see Neanderthal-type mitochondria in any humans today. But across the entire genome, where you can see many, many stories and get a more complete picture of our genetic interaction with Neanderthals, we can see this small signal, 1 to 4% of non-African genomes have Neanderthal ancestry. What it means that this spread throughout the world is that it makes some admixture scenarios more likely than others. Specifically, the scenario that I described, where it happened early on when humans first came out of Africa, before they were in all of these parts of the world where we find this signal now, that's when it's happened. And the signal that we see appears to be about the same extent in an individual from Papua New Guinea as we see in someone from France, as we see from someone in China.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Neanderthals in the family, new evidence that Homo sapiens and Neanderthals interbred when we all walked the earth, and that many of us carry a little Neanderthal in our genes right now. Today we have two members of the three-person team who led the research that cracked the Neanderthal genome and has put all of this evidence before the whole world now, and it is getting an enormous amount of attention. Ed Green and David Reich join us from Cold Spring Harbor, New York. They were right in the middle of the work that was done under the auspices of the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany. Their research came out in the May 7th edition of Science magazine, and it's just ringing bells all over the place. Of course, humans imagined this long before their research came out. Here's a scene from the 1986 movie based on Gene Auld's Clan of the Cave Bear. This is purest fiction, but you can hear imagination at work. A Neanderthal medicine man here initiating the female protagonist, a Cro-Magnon Homo sapien child, Ayla, into his clan, gives her the cave lion spirit. Characters speak in a Neanderthal language invented for the movie.
If I'm Yara, Timot, Goldra, Klaus! Shima, Bom, Ela.
There you are, Neanderthals in the Clan of the Cave Bear film. 1 to 4% of what percentage of the human population at this point, Ed, would you say have that representation of Neanderthal genes in their own genome?
Well, for the experiment that we did, we wanted to sample as widely as possible for several reasons to look for this signal and really look in a region of the world where we didn't expect to see it, where we are sure Neanderthals never reached, like Papua New Guinea. Mm-hmm. But we see the data in three individuals that we have sequenced, one from China, one from Papua New Guinea, and another one from France. And from this, we extrapolate that this happened very early on and was carried in all subsequent human populations. Of course, every human has not been tested, and there could be other interesting stories if the sampling is deeper. But it looks like now the most likely explanation is that this 1 to 4% is in all non-African populations today. I don't know if David has anything to add to this.
David?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think one sort of potential misconception about this 1 to 4% is that it might vary across individuals outside of Africa, because that 1 to 4% range represents our range of uncertainty. We're not exactly sure whether it's 1% or 2% or 3% or 4%, but we think that as far as we can tell, it's exactly the same percentage across the non-African population.
So it's not that I've got 1% and that bum brother-in-law of mine is 4%. We can't be throwing that around.
No, I don't think so.
And how does it get spread so widely? What does that mean about how the interaction unfolded?
The history of the migration of the history of modern humans outside of Africa is really interesting. It's been known from genetic and archaeological and fossil data for a while that anatomically modern humans, people whose fossils look like ours, really don't appear outside of Africa and the Middle East more recently than at most 55 or 60,000 years ago.
Right.
And that there's this explosion of modern humans out of Africa at that time, carrying a particular archaeological set of tools and so on.
But if Homo sapiens came up through the Middle East very early in their trek out of Africa and interbred with Neanderthals right there, then presumably that would have spread like dandelion puff all over the rest of the world.
Exactly. So the thing that we're thinking is the simplest explanation for the data is that right at the gateway of Africa, as modern humans were first emerging out of Africa or maybe even in North Africa itself, there was an interaction between modern humans, interbreeding between modern humans and Neanderthals, and that this resulted in a population that had a bit of Neanderthal ancestry in it that then expanded, and that was the population that expanded. So that would explain how it's gone everywhere. It was injected into the population. It was incorporated into the population. It was assimilated into the population at the beginning.
Now, not all species can interbreed. I mean, most often they cannot. So, Ed Green, what does it tell us biologically or in genetic terms that Neanderthals and Homo sapiens could interbreed and did?
Well, it tells us that they could and did. That's the expected result was that we would see 0%, and 1 to 4% is a lot more than zero. It's known that humans have a different karyotype, a different complement of chromosomes than other great apes. We have 23, and our chromosome 2 is fused in humans. It exists as two separate chromosomes in the other great apes. We don't know this about Neanderthals, what their karyotype was, and it could have been that oftentimes these are reproductive barriers. So, you know, one idea that was out there is perhaps they had a different karyotype, and despite the fact that we overlapped in time and space for a long time, that they could not, even if they did physically interbreed, the offspring wouldn't be viable. We know now that because we see the signal that the hybrid offspring must have been viable. What this means in a larger context in terms of whether they were a different species or exactly how different they were from us is, you know, something that people have to draw their own conclusions and put this in their own kind of mental framework. But the new thing that we can bring now is that we do have this 1 to 4% non-Africans have this 1 to 4% Neanderthal genetic legacy.
I don't know if you high-tier geneticists are bemused or put off or what by Clan of the Cave Bear, the popular imagination around this, but certainly Jean Aul had a huge bestseller with her Earth's Children series, including that book. Here's a little bit of tape, and I want to just throw it out there and get your reaction more, where she's describing the role of sexuality in her fictional depiction of Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. This is a 1985 interview.
I felt that it was absolutely essential to the story, that this was not at all gratuitous, for several reasons. One of which is if you are creating an entire world and you leave out an element that is as important in defining cultural attitudes and social mores as sexuality is, you're leaving a gap that becomes obvious for its omission. Secondly, there is a great deal of, I mean, I've been to some of the sites and I've been in some of the caves, and there's a very obvious sexual component.
Jean Aul, author of Clan of the Cave Bear, there in 1985. Ed Green, David Reich, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington Allison Brooks. She's a specialist in Paleolithic archaeology, human evolution, and the politics of cultural heritage. She's a research associate in the Human Origins Program at the Smithsonian Institution, professor of anthropology and international affairs at George Washington University. Allison Brooks, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So how big a thunderclap is this in your world?
Well, I'm very excited about this work, and I want to congratulate the authors on this. I know it's been a long road and a rather unexpected result, but I've felt for a long time that it was highly improbable that there was no interbreeding between Neanderthals early anatomically modern humans. It just seems knowing what we know about interbreeding between even very different species of primates, different species of baboons, for instance, that have been separated for not a few hundred thousand, but perhaps as much as a million years or
mm-hmm,
more.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing what we know about humans, I think it always seemed very improbable. The question was it common enough that any of it had survived? And this evidence seemed to suggest that it was.
I know this is kind of news to the world of archaeology, and there's still some dispute about it and contention over it, but this is going to leave people trying to imagine the social interaction, which I guess you have to have some of, to interbreed between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals. Is it possible to speculate about that, Allison?
I think there is... it's not very hard to imagine the social interaction involved. I have to tell you that I've been teaching a seminar this semester on exactly this issue. What would be the archaeological and fossil evidence for such an interbreeding event? Well before this paper actually came out, my students were doing their final presentations last week as the news was breaking. And one of the things that they were considering doing was that the Smithsonian Human Origins Group has just opened a new exhibit at the Smithsonian, which involves a part of the exhibit where you can actually morph yourself into a Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
This is also an iPhone app.
We've got a link to that Neanderthal at our website.
Right. Yeah. And so my students' idea was to turn themselves into Neanderthals and advertise in the Craigslist personals column and see what kind of hits they got as Neanderthals.
So maybe they could socialize that way today. But what about then? I mean, do you imagine Neanderthals and Homo sapiens hanging out, partying, regularly mating, you know, this consensual or rape as Ginal had it in Clan of the Cave Bear?
Well, I don't think we can get there from the evidence, but mm-hmm. what we can do is see how much of the technology and the other cultural practices of modern humans that had previously been developed in Africa, how much of that do we see once they among Neanderthals before we have evidence of the modern humans actually spreading in large numbers into Eurasia?
In other words, do we owe some of that technology to Neanderthals? Is that what you're raising?
No,
here?
Do we? The
or
question
did we bring
is.
It?
The question is, did we bring it with us? And is it? There's long been a debate in archaeology about the fact that Neanderthals' technology and the culture that we can retrieve in the archaeological record is very static for a long period of time. And then perhaps 10,000 years before the first modern humans show up outside of the Middle East, it suddenly begins to change, and the Neanderthals begin to develop all kinds of things that they didn't have before. Is this because they were interbreeding with the modern humans, or did the Neanderthals just happen to invent these things on their own? And there's a very fierce debate in archaeology about whether this is acculturation to modern humans on the periphery, or whether this is independent invention by Neanderthals who just happened to invent these things.
And then there's the question of why the Neanderthals died out, and we'll look at that. We have so many callers with so many questions. Allison and David, Ed, please stand by. Let's go to Nashville. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Very well.
Just wondering, again, I know that you guys are geneticists, but if there's any indication what that type of genetic input might have on behavior or physical characteristics of a modern person. I mean, if that's even something to consider at all, or that's, nothing, is it, that wouldn't make any difference at all.
Well, let's look at that. Ed Green, what about, I mean, do you see qualities in modern humans that point to these Neanderthal gene bits in our genome?
All of the indication thus far is that the genetic contribution that we find from Neanderthals appears to be really low frequency. It's 1 to 4% in any individual, but it's a different 1 to 4% in any individual, and there is no indication that it brings any important gene or any important gene variant over. It's something that we have not explored completely, but the signal thus far is that it is just random bits of the genome that tells more of a story about history than it tells about biology. Furthermore, if there had been something that came over from Neanderthals, as it were, and came to high frequency because it was important evolutionarily, then that would have been found, or it's likely that that could have been found before we had any Neanderthal data, just by looking at genetic variation within humans today. And in fact, there have been, before we published the Neanderthal genome within the last 5 years or so, a few reports claiming to see things like this, high-frequency regions of the genome that have variants that are in high frequency in Europe and are in genes whose functions can be speculated about. And we looked at these regions in the Neanderthal and don't see this. So the handful of things that were speculated to have perhaps come from Neanderthals, we don't see that. And there is no strong signal for this or any real signal that we can see at all that the genetic contribution from Neanderthals leads to any functional consequences for the groups who have that.
David Rush, I want to dig in deeper there because I can imagine people still trying to break through to your level of understanding here. Does that mean that there are or are not, or might not be physical characteristics that would be related to this 1 to 4% of Neanderthal gene?
I think, as I had said, this 1 to 4%, as far as we can tell, based on what we've looked at so far, is kind of a random smattering of genetic material.
But could somebody then have a Neanderthal brow at random? Heavy brow, and there it is right there. There goes that 1% or not.
Yeah, sure. The genetic material will contain, a brow is a complex structure which has many genes, not one, and so I think reconstructing the entire Neanderthal brow compared to modern human might be a difficult thing to do. You would require many of these very rare gene variants all coming together, so that's perhaps improbable. But the observation is that what we see is kind of a random smattering of material from Neanderthal ancestry that's been incorporated into the genomes of non-Africans, and 1 to 4% will contain some functional genetic material, some genetic material that does something. But so far, we have no indication that it's special, that, for example, there's one genetic variant that's risen to very high frequency that derives from Neanderthal ancestry. And that would be something interesting to look for. We've looked for it a little bit and haven't really been able to find anything like that.
But hypothetically, then, could this 1 to 4%, if it's drifting around, shows up at random, could it affect the physique or behavior in one modern human and not in another?
I think that, genetic variation, and people are very variable in their appearance and in their biology, and a lot of that, not all of that by any means, but a lot of that is in the genes. And so the mixture of modern human and Neanderthal genetic material, of course, provided modern humans outside of Africa with some genetic material which was a little bit more distant from what they already had, but not very much more distant, that potentially could have been used and enriched the gene pool. We know very much that in Africa today, in Africa south of the Sahara, there's much more genetic variation in Africa south of the Sahara, even with this extra diverse ancestry that's present in non-Africans. So the pool of genetic variation, which is a library for new traits, is much richer in Africa than outside of Africa, even with this extra material.
It's an incredible picture and news that takes some work to fully take on board. We're going to come back and look more at it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about Neanderthals in the family, Neanderthals, if you prefer, new evidence that Homo sapiens and Neanderthals interbred when we all walked the earth, and that many of us carry a little Neanderthal in our genes. Right now, today, we have two members of the team who cracked the code of the Neanderthal genome with us today, both joining us from Cold Spring Harbor. Ed Green and David Reich are here. David Reich from the Department of Genetics at Harvard Medical School. Ed Green, biomolecular engineer from the University of California, Santa Cruz. Allison Brooke is with us. Brooks is with us as well. She's a Paleolithic archaeologist from George Washington University. Let's take a call from Lori in Chesapeake, Virginia. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about the evolution of Neanderthals, if we know any of that, and also if in that evolution there was a common ancestor with what became modern humans.
Let's see. So they began quite differently. So I guess one way of putting that, let me start here if I may, Lori. David, does this interbreeding, is it possible that it would go back to one instance of interbreeding, or do you presume from what you see that there was lots of interbreeding, or is it possible to begin to know?
Well, I think that the caller's question is probably best answered by Allison, who I think sort of knows more about this than
sure.
than we do. But the a quick answer to your question is that a very small number of interbreeding events are potentially consistent with the data that we see into a small population. So it could be a very small number of interbreeding events into a very small founding population,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a very large number of interbreeding events into a large population, in either case comprising 1 to 4% of the ancestry. The genetic data suggest, we think quite carefully, a date for the split of sub-Saharan Africans, people south of Sahara, from Neanderthals, and we estimate somewhere between 270 and 440,000 years. But I think Allison could provide a better answer to the caller's question about the what's known about when Neanderthals and modern humans diverged based on the fossil and especially the archaeological record.
Yes, to Lori's question, Allison, can you take us into that, to the evolutionary path if we go further back? Does everybody go back to Lucy, or where do we split apart here? Do we have a common ancestor?
Well, the whole overall issue is that it's a lot more complicated than a direct line from Lucy to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that Lucy is not likely somewhere in our ancestry, but that there's been a lot of probably more than two event times when large populations spread out of Africa over parts of the rest of the old world. And and specifically about the origin of the Neanderthals, again, there are several points of view. One is that there's an extremely old lineage in Europe, that goes back to the some of the first fossils in Europe outside of the Caucasus. The oldest European fossil outside of the Caucasus is in Spain at possible date of 1.2 million,
mm-hmm.
and there are people who see that and another Spanish fossil that's around 800,000 years old as being directly ancestral to a very separate lineage of Europeans that led ultimately to Neanderthals, who then spread eastward into Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I was very pleased about in this paper is it confirmed a very different and more nuanced view that the split was later. There's a lot of evidence emerging now that we're beginning to know the time period better in between, let's say, a million and 200,000 years ago. There's emerging evidence that would suggest that maybe there was a lot of back and forth from Africa in that time period, and that there are things, for instance, aspects of behavior and culture that show up in Europe around 400,000 years ago or 350,000 years ago, ways of making stone tools, ways of creating hunting weapons, that these things could possibly represent another infusion of people from Africa or the Near East. And certainly there's no trace of true Neanderthals anywhere before around 250,000 years ago. So it could be that what your genetic data suggests is very well confirmed by both the archaeology and the fossil record. There's an ancestral species called Homo heidelbergensis by some, which has, or perhaps it's two very closely related ancestors, one in Europe and one in Africa, but they are very similar to each other, and they occupy the time between around 600,000 and around 300,000 years ago.
What do we know from the archaeological record about how Neanderthals and Homo sapiens compared in physique, in, lifestyle, in technology, if that's the right word?
Okay, Neanderthals were in many ways adapted to living in a colder climate than the modern humans who came out of Africa. They had shorter arms and legs like some Arctic people today. They had very robust sort of square bodies. They had big noses, which may have helped them to warm the air.
Mm-hmm.
They were also very tough and moved around a lot. They interacted a lot with, as far as we can tell, with large dangerous animals. Their bodies are...
That is, hunting.
Hunting, right. Mm-hmm. Work that's been done on the composition of their bones suggested that they certainly ate a great deal of meat. And the in their sites, we find a lot of bones from hunting and evidence that they were able to hunt not just baby animals and sick animals the way wolves do, for instance, but also large, dangerous adults. So we know they were very competent. We know that they almost certainly buried their dead, so they had a different sensibility, if you like, than some of the earlier members of our lineage. They also used black pigments. And
for drawing, painting?
We don't know what they did with the pigments. We don't have any paintings, but we do find the pigments in their sites. And they were, in general, fairly complex. They were able to survive relatively cold periods in Europe. And previous Europeans had a
tough time doing that.
Tough time with that. In Africa, in the same time range as we have Neanderthals, there's a somewhat different way of life that involved more elaborate hunting, the possible development of complex projectile weapons. In other words, the modern humans had more complicated weapons. It might be the same story all over again about why they spread. They also had more complicated social networks, and we can see those from the extent to which they exchanged raw materials over large distances to make their weapons with. They also had a more complex symbolic life, if you like. They not only did they use pigments and use them much earlier than the Neanderthals did, but they also made geometric designs on things, which implies a kind of a mathematical sensibility. And they also made beads and decorated themselves. And one of the reasons that I've always thought that people would use personal ornamentation is if they were dealing often with people that they didn't know. For instance, you might wear a wedding ring or another symbol of marriage
to
another society to show that you're not available or your status or whatever. And we see that as early as perhaps 120,000 years ago, the first modern humans who get to the Near East were already doing this.
Can you picture them socializing with Neanderthals, if that's the right word, sitting around the same campfire? Apart from the mating, which is definitely socializing of a sort.
Right. We can picture it. We can also imagine more hostile kinds of encounters, or we can imagine perhaps exchange kinds of encounters. It very likely would have involved all the kinds of encounters that humans are like us are capable of, but Neanderthals might not have been receptive to complete strangers coming into their area. I think we sort of imagine that there was this densely populated landscape of Neanderthals and modern humans walk into it, but in fact, all of these populations were actually very sparse on the ground because you need a big territory to supply your needs if you're not growing your own food.
Very sparse, and yet one can imagine if they shared terrain, they would have been very aware of that terrain and of each other. Let's go to Paul, Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Thanks, Ed, Dave, Allison. A couple of questions. One thing I want to understand is why for so long have people thought that they didn't interbreed? It seems to me almost something I presume they did do. I don't know if it was because they thought they were like donkeys or mules or whichever that are non-reproducible once they are born, or if it's more a social attribute or something like that. So that'd be one question. The other thought.
You mean the offspring might not have been able to reproduce? Okay. Well, look. Why do we assume otherwise? And your second question, Paul?
Yeah, a quick one is: do you think there's any health or other implications for Africans who don't show these kind of genes in their genome? Is there an attribute that may imply other things for Africans that aren't part of the rest of the Earth?
Interesting questions. Our time is short. Let us pick them up, Paul. Allison, first, why has it been assumed that they didn't interbreed, if that's been the presumption?
Yes, well, it's certainly, as I said, this is certainly has still been a controversy. There certainly are archaeologists and paleoanthropologists who have long accepted the interbreeding idea. What has argued for a very separate history of Neanderthals and anatomically modern humans is, first of all, this long sequence of skeletons in Europe who share some of this of the Neanderthals' characteristics, but perhaps one could argue that these characteristics evolve over and over again when you hit the cold regions of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also that Neanderthals have a very distinct appearance. They have, as we all know from some of the shows and the depictions and the museum recreations, and modern humans look quite different. And we generally, a lot of the features, it's very hard to argue that they were interbreeding when even the very late Neanderthals are still physically quite distinct, and when aspects of the modern human culture that we see in Africa seem to be so little spread among Neanderthals at an early stage of Neanderthal development.
Ed Green, how do you square your research with that observation that, these traits don't show up in the skeletal remains, and yet you find it in the genome?
Well, the expectation, I guess, from the genetics perspective was really shaped, it was born in 97 when we got the first genetic evidence from the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the field at that time of paleoanthropology was contentious, and there were people who claimed, looking at the fossil record, that there was an archaeological record, that there's clear evidence for interaction and perhaps interbreeding, and people on the other end of the spectrum who said there's clear evidence against this. The genetic evidence, up until the genome was sequenced and published last week, was always clear that there was no evidence for this. The mitochondria always of Neanderthal is distinct from the mitochondria of human. In fact, it's one of the ways that we show that the data that we have is clean, that it really is Neanderthal data, because the mitochondria is so easy to distinguish Neanderthal from modern human. So when I say that our expectation was that there was no interbreeding, I'm really speaking from a genetics perspective, from the perspective of a geneticist, that we had seen Neanderthal data come in, trickle in over the years, and it always was the case that Neanderthals fall outside the variation of modern humans. That observation always had limited power to see small amounts of interbreeding. The signal could have been hiding in the nuclear genome, and in fact, what David was able to show was that it was hiding there, and you have to look very carefully to find it. But when you do, it's clear that it's there.
And that overturns everything. Let me get another call here. Spencer, Charlotte, North Carolina. Spencer, you're on the air.
Okay, 1-4% in European populations.
And Asian, and all the way to Papua New Guinea, a whole lot of people.
And below Sahara, African populations with none. What's going to keep all of these race baiters from jumping onto this and twisting the information around to suit their purposes?
What, that Neanderthal makes somebody like super, super sturdy or something? I don't know. Allison, you think about these things. What about that question?
Well, I think it's most of the genes that the team has identified, we don't understand their function. And humans vary across the world in a lot of different ways. There are a lot of different histories. There have also been some arguments about At some stage, modern humans interbreeding with, or at least meeting up with, some earlier populations in the Far East that are neither Neanderthal nor earlier modern human. So there is absolutely no evidence in Africa, if we take the early record, that modern humans who stayed in Africa could not produce the same range of complexity, mm-hmm. art, symbolism, all the kinds of wonderful cognitive things that humans are capable of, that they differed in any important way from the capabilities of the people who left. There is simply no argument, and the art and representation in Africa that we find, the first images in Africa of sort of wall paintings or paintings are just about as old as the oldest ones in Europe. So I think it's quite likely that these are relatively minor issues, and in the one case where something's been identified or where a group has been identified, and maybe the geneticist can speak to this, it mainly has to do with skin color or aspects of the skin.
Well, we're out of time right there today. I'm going to embrace the wonderful complexity and kind of humility that comes with all this. We learn more and more who's the caveman, who's not. We've all got some heck of a wonderfully complex background here, and I'm grateful to each of you, Alison Brooks, David Reich, Ed Green, for sharing it with us today as we think about Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. Thanks very much to each of you. And listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.